Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Peterson's Strobe tuners are quite literally the best tuners in the world. Available in the form of the Stomp HD pedal, the Strobo Clip Clip-On, and even an iOS and Android-supported Strobe tuning app! The Strobo Stomp HD comes in an incredibly high-quality standard effects pedal size chassis with an absolutely whopping LCD screen size and user-defined variable color display, featuring over 100 exclusive sweetened tunings designed to help correct inherent tuning issues exhibited by many instruments. And the guided tunings mode, my favorite, displays numeric string values instead of traditional note names, making for surefire, intuitive, and rapid retuning to any number of open and alternative tunings. Peterson tuners make tuning accuracy simple and definite. It's probably the most important part of your pedal board, so why go for anything other than the best? Check them out at petersontuners.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Good evening.
And Matt Knight.
Good evening.
Yes, exactly. And welcome, welcome, dear listener, to Season 2, Episode 16, the 16th episode in our series of guitar nerdery. You know, 2021 continues to be quite light for news and new releases. A couple of things, but not really a lot going on. I tell you what, Gear of the Year is going to be easy this year. Because they're really, unless we have a massive, do you think we're just going to have a ton of stuff come out right at the end of the year?
Difficult to say. I think, I don't know. I think we've talked about a lot this year. It's definitely different. I don't think there's probably going to be any Summer NAMM. Haven't really heard any rumblings of it. I heard a few people say that, you know, if it happens, they're not going to go. But I don't think brands can slow down for much longer. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we get to the end of the year and a bunch more stuff sort of starts happening. Especially, I guess, as we gear up to NAMM next year, which I'm assuming may happen.
Well, I think I've already booked a hotel.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty scary to think that we're about to enter May, like the fifth month of the year. I sort of was talking to a few colleagues today. I'm just like, what? What? Did we do anything like January to April? But yeah, I think there'll be a surprising amount of stuff by the time we get to the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree. I think a rush towards autumn winter when hopefully the live industry begins to sort of globally open back up. I think, like you said, Matt, many brands have sort of just been on their heels a little, on the back foot, maybe just putting off potentially planned big releases. And that can only go on for so long, I hope.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I guess the lack of kind of retail shops where people can try things out, that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. I'd say like the lack of shows, but shows are so much more like a marketing exercise or like an influencer thing. At least I feel like they are. But then, you know, I'm sort of in that category. So, I guess you'd accidentally feel like that. But I kind of feel like there isn't really much difference when it comes to the amount of promotion you put behind something. If anything, people are more glued to their computer screens, which is where the bulk of the promotion for new products is going to happen now. So I'm surprised at the amount that it slowed down.
But, you know, yes, I guess that being able to physically play musical instruments really should be the crux of it. And that's
yeah, I also think there's probably a lot of things that probably can't, you know, we can't see, you know, in terms of production, in terms
invisible
of
invisible guitars.
Yeah, in terms of physical guitars. But no, stuff that like might slow companies down.
Sure.
You know, I think there's just so much going on. But actually, I think maybe a chance for brands to take a breather. Because, you know, by the looks of it, from what I see in the Facebook groups that I'm in for work, you know, people are playing now more than ever at home. So I think there's just a big boost on that now. I mean, the amount of people who have gone, I've got time to learn to play an instrument. I think that's the hard thing. You know, a lot of people have gone, now I've got some free time. I might learn to play the guitar, where all the people who are like, I play guitar for a living are like, it's the one thing I can't do.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit of a role reversal.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the thing, isn't it? You know, even for me, like, you know, so much more time at home, like time to do more music. But, you know, the people that I speak to out there playing gigs, you know, I spoke to one person who I know who at the beginning of last year had 129 gigs booked with Hungary's biggest pop star. It was literally like a stadium tour across Eastern Europe, and you know, it's all cancelled. You know, it's just mad. But yeah, people who have now got loads of free time, like, oh, I play drums, I'll play a piano or guitar.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure about yourself, Matt, but I know, Joe, weren't you saying on a recent episode how you've kind of had the time to learn a ton about recording that you kind of didn't necessarily have the time and means to do before?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's always kind of, you know, push and pull. It's always compromise, isn't it? We've lost all these... I've lost all the drunken weeks of touring and all of that sort of crazy stuff. But in place of it, having the time at home to sort of sit down and actually having time where I'm not just moving from, you know, work to, I don't know, to a pub, to a gig, you know, to a tour, to like to someone's birthday celebrations, to a holiday with friends. So like, you know, you're always doing all those things, and it's been lovely to just have that downtime and be like, yes, I'm going to teach myself. Because when this all started, I couldn't use Studio One. I didn't really know my way around a DAW. I mean, I could edit the podcast, but that was about it. I used Adobe Audition to edit the podcast, which is, you know, that's not really a platform even designed for music. So it was something totally foreign to me. So to go from that at the start of lockdown to having sort of co-produced and mastered two records with my band this year, and, you know, hosted, you know, along with Matt, the home recording guide where we're imparting knowledge to people, as basic and rudimentary as a lot of that stuff is, I really feel like that's been kind of the wonderful thing about lockdown. It's just the time to learn skills. I actually feel like my playing has come on this year more than it has, you know, I don't know, in like a decade. I feel like I've... you know, you sort of, your playing's always kind of that you get stuck, and then all of a sudden something happens, and then you're past that, and you feel like you're excelling, and you're learning new things quickly. I kind of felt like I did that this year, and reached a point where probably for the first time in my life, I'm actually happy with my playing ability. You know, before I was very self-conscious about it. One of the main reasons that Guitar Nerds doesn't do YouTube videos is that I'd have to do the playing, and I'm really not, you know, haven't been okay with that. But now I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Fine. You know, I'm never going to be Rabir, but also I flipping hate that sort of guitar work. So, you know, I'm totally fine with the way that I play for the first time.
Yeah.
Thank you, coronavirus. Well, no, actually, let's not go that far. But, you know, the lockdown has definitely allowed us to learn new things.
That's awesome. And like, that's huge what you're saying in terms of kind of confidence in your own playing. The only other thing I was going to add was like the wonderful thing about sort of learning the ropes of recording as well is like, however technology is advancing and will continue to advance, like the fundamentals are always going to remain the same in that sense, in terms of kind of performing and laying down a recording of what you're doing. So I think the fact that you've ended up sort of using the time so well, both in learning and in sharing your learning experience with the listeners, is really something.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, mate. Thank you very much. But yeah, I mean, I guess kind of on kind of that, the line of sitting at home and wanting to do music stuff and not having an outlet for it, this week I decided to do a great big A-B-ing of every guitar I own to work out what's the best guitar. And do you know what I discovered? I don't own that many guitars. I've kind of got rid of them all over the last little while. Like, Matt, it was only like 2 years ago where I owned like four different Stratocasters. And most of my stuff's basses now. There's probably 20 basses here, but I was going through my guitars and I was like, oh, there's seven or eight here and three of them are just loan stock, you know? But
Well, yeah, I guess some of it was Harlequin, or maybe you did own it. I don't know. I've always known you as more of a bass person than a guitar person. But you have got some fantastic guitars, though.
Well, it's because I early on hemorrhaged an awful lot of money on a Gibson Custom Shop ES-175, and that was, I was kind of like, well, this is so good that I don't need anything else ever. But you know. I'd also like to buy a flat at some point, so I've put that in a flight case and put it away so that I can separate myself from it, so that I won't feel attached to it when I sell it to pay for a deposit.
So it's a confirmed asset in,
yes, exactly.
In your life. Yeah.
You can sell it to me, though, Joe.
Yeah, sure, Matt. You can't afford it, Matt. It's really expensive. It was like $5,000.
I'd always love a 175, though.
Oh, it's so good. It's such a fantastic guitar.
I just think that they're more versatile than you think. And obviously, if you think back to, you think back to the early ones, you know, late 1950s, they had the same pickups as 59 Les Pauls, had those PAF pickups, had, a huge range of sounds in them. And I mean, is it Chris Squire from Yes? Whoever who played in Yes. Player. Was he the bass player?
Yeah.
I can't remember. The guitar player played a 175. In that band, which you think you wouldn't necessarily think. You always think of them as jazzers, but I think that they can be so much more than that. I've always wanted a 175. I think they're just fantastic guitars. And like I say, you know, really versatile too.
My big problem with the ES-175 is that I was doing this like little gig thing with my partner Emma, and the ES-175 was like being set up, and so the practice, there were only a couple of practices for it, but I did it with a different guitar, a solid body, and I had my board set up on a Line 6 Helix, and for some of it I was using the Helix as bass pedals as well, because you can set it up to fire sort of synth notes, and then you can set each pedal to be a different note, so you can use it like an organ pedal board, and you can use the effects properly. Yes, super cool. Yeah, really cool, like a four note generation thing, so you can make them chords or just sort of straight notes, and then use the snapshot modes to be able to kind of, you know, switch one on and the others off kind of thing. So you can set those, you know, obviously you probably want to still be able to navigate out of that patch easily. So so you might set your top four to be your other patches and your bottom four to be those four notes, which is kind of what I did. And it was great. You know, you can use like the tremolo, a little bit of reverb, get some really nice organ sounds from them. And I was using that because it was just a guitar and a drum machine. I was using my feet to play the bass lines and accompany me. Great, fantastic. Came to actually doing the performance, used the ES-175. Oh my God, could it not deal with the amount of bass coming through that organ? And the whole thing was just vibrating off of me. Like I could barely, I thought the guitar was going to shake itself apart, but it kind of almost ruined a lot of it because I ended up having to be like, I'm just going to have to stop using it because the guitar was just fully feeding back every time I was using the organ notes, but
put a t-shirt in it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember Jack White played something Hollow Body for a little while, just around the time that the like Seven Nation Army was being played literally everywhere. He was playing a Hollow Body which had strung up with a bass string on the low end, so he could play that bass line, and I think the rest of them were conventional guitar strings. And he was playing a big jazz box guitar that he'd filled with clay in order to keep it dead. Or, you know, clay, something like that, Play-Doh. I don't know what it was, but it was like a...
Play-Doh.
He had solidified it.
Yeah,
literally.
Exactly. Yeah. Which was, I at the time, I thought incredibly cool. But yeah. So the ES-175 didn't actually even win it for me in my sort of my A-being, my test of everything. But I had, at the moment, I've got two lovely Eldritch guitars from podcast, friend of the podcast, Dave Lee. I've got his Stealth Esquire, which we've talked about a fair bit, and that lovely pink Mustang with the Lace Sensor, Matt, that you were a big fan of.
Yes.
Great pickup, the Lace Sensor. Like, really, really strong effort, really good. Fan fret, though, I wasn't really up for that. I have such... Fan frets, I think they are good for people with correct technique. I do a lot of you know, anchoring my thumb round and using that for the low two strings, and you just can't do that effectively with a fan fret. It becomes very awkward. And then I've got a Tokai, a 1985 Love Rock, a very nice,
great kind guitar. Of
really good guitar, but honestly, the pickups are outrageous, like outrageous. You couldn't clean up this guitar if you tried. It sounds driven on the Boss Katana acoustic setting.
Like, you know,
they are the loudest, most aggressive pickups I've ever heard. So
this Love Rock is hot.
Yeah. So I love the guitar. It looks fantastic and everything that I want a Les Paul style guitar to look like. But I find that when I pick it up to play, I'm like, I'll just play this unplugged. You know, it's just too wild for me. And then courtesy of Jay Cross, there's an American professional jazz master. One of the new ones in the that awful finish, the finish that I hate, that I could barely get around. The is it called Dark Knight? The weird blue to black.
Oh, Mystic Knight, wasn't it?
Called Dark Knight. I'm pretty sure it's Dark Knight.
Opposite burst?
Yeah, it's the opposite burst, bursting from blue to black, which, you know, is not a traditional colour, so already it's wrong. But you know, it is a fantastic sounding guitar. Jazz masters do sound great. I can't help. I know it's not the case, but those sorts of necks feel cheap to me. Like, I know they're not. I know it's a very premium guitar. Hopefully Jay won't listen to this podcast. But when you take... when you take like a vintage gloss looking neck and you make it satin, that feels like an encore. And so when you put it on an £1,800 instrument, I just can't get around it. I can't support that. Just make it gloss so that it's like a proper jazz master. Jazz masters should have gloss necks. That's how they were made. But it was a very good sounding and very versatile guitar, a fantastic all-rounder, maybe a better all-rounder than a Strat, really, the American Pro Jazz Master. I was very impressed with it. It was definitely cool, but the finish for me, couldn't quite get it. And of course, I've got another much better looking offset, which is the Harmony Silhouette. And of course, I've got two Harmonies, the Harmony Silhouette and the Juno. And to be honest, I know predictably, because I've of course had my tongue well and truly up Harmony's bumhole for some time, but it came down to the Silhouette and the Juno, and I just love the neck on the Juno and those gold foil P90s. I know every now and again, me and Matt just end up doing like a 10 minutes of a podcast, being like, such a good guitar. But it really is such a good guitar. I mean, obviously, I love the look of this Silhouette more. It's the cool offset. It's in that lovely kind of midnight blue finish. What do they call it? Slate. Oh, what a great name. Great colour name. But it's lovely. It's fantastic. You know, probably if I was playing live, I'd take the Silhouette. But the Juno for recording, just that solid rosewood neck. It's deeper, more rounded, the neck. I love the 3x3 headstock. And just those gold foil P90s, I keep coming back to them. They are the best all-rounder guitar I have ever played. I thoroughly recommend checking them out. Looks like Anderton's are big fans of them at the moment as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not to. We shouldn't turn this into another 10-minute harmony rant, but I just love it. It's just a great guitar. It's a. I must admit, I had it. I plugged it in yesterday, and it definitely. When you use a lot of gain, it definitely has that kind of like sort of mid-range honk to it, which is. Kind of cool. It's kind of unique. Maybe some people wouldn't dig it, but I mean, for the clean stuff, it just has a vibe. It has a feel that I think's great. Don't mind the small body. Plays really, really well. Definitely time to put some new strings on mine. But the best guitar you can buy for around a grand, I think, my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not going to help here at all because I love it too. Absolutely yeah. Huge fan.
They are very, very good. I can't wait to see this the range expand as they've announced that it will be into this kind of vintage spec and more modern spec thing almost. You know, to dealing with things, I guess Fender sort of do that. Well, I guess they do that with American Vintage and is American Vintage the current name? Or is it American Original? I can't keep up with.
I think it's American Original. Vintage feels like the old one.
Yeah, that's right. And obviously they're modern professionals and players and stuff. I guess Harmony are going for a similar thing. Now they're going to be doing vintage-inspired and more modern ones. But I'm very excited about them going down that, the vintage-inspired thing and maybe looking at... Because these are all inspired by the original Harmony models, but they've got lots of modern, appointments. I'd be excited to see some of the weirder... sort of Sears catalog things that Harmony have done in the past turning up on new guitars, that would be great.
Yeah. Absolutely. I dream of a Harmony bass line as well.
Ooh.
Wouldn't it be good? Did they do a Harmony Silhouette bass many, many moons ago, or am I imagining things?
They did, yeah.
I think I've seen a few pop up on Reverb.
Yeah, it was because it was the Bobcat. And I've seen a couple pop up all over the place. It's tricky, isn't it? Because Kay did such a solid job of ripping off Harmony, or not really ripping, making the same models as Harmony around that time. That I'm never 100% sure who released what back in the kind of 60s. But
I reckon a Juno bass would be cool.
A
Juno baritone. That's what I want.
That
please,
be
Harmony,
so cool.
Make me a Juno with a baritone neck. That's what I want.
Yeah.
That sounds good. I keep thinking about the pocket bass, about whether I should get the pocket bass. Eastwood have remade the pocket bass, the bass that Bob Dylan used on countless records and said was the best bass for recording. It's called the pocket bass because it's something like a 27-inch scale. Like it's the smallest framed bass, but... It sounds fantastic, and Eastwood do currently make a reissue of that.
Amazing.
I'd love to try one.
Yeah, it's like 800 quid, and it's kind of like, I would love this, but also I'm never going to play it outside of my room, and it's £800. But,
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know if I have £800 lying around for something that I'm not going to gig immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Matt Knight, you bought something new. You bought a new pedal, surprisingly, just unlike you this week.
New/old. So I go through phases of like just constantly scouring eBay, just. This popped up and I was like, I'll put it in my watch list. And it was a cheap price. I was like, I'll put it in my watch list. And if it's gone, then it's gone. But otherwise, maybe I'm tempted. And it was a modded Line 6 DL4. So obviously DL4, possibly one of the greatest delay pedals of all time. It's been going since 2000. Maybe even earlier than that. Maybe 1999 was the first one.
Wow.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it is 1999 because when we did Gear of the... Oh, no, when we did Gear of the Decade, obviously it was 2000. I can't remember if we did a Gear of Best of 2000s. But yeah, DL4 is pretty damn old. And in more recent years, there's been a few companies that have taken it under their wing to do modifications. The first of which is replace the foot switches. The later models are notorious for kind of breaky foot switches, I think, with a lot of hard stamping. And then there's a few other things, like people have added like an expression knob on the top and stuff like that, because obviously the Line 6 DL4 had, or the whole 4 series had a really fantastic expression system where you could set, you know, really easily put the expression pedal in the heel position, set some settings, push it forward to the toe position, set some other settings, and it would sweep between the two. Super, super simple. And people wanted to do that in real time. And then, yeah, this one came up with one of the mods that I definitely think opens up the unit. Should have been something that they did from the beginning, or something they should definitely do now. But as we know, the DL4 is famed for its fantastic looper mode, obviously with people like Dave Knudsen from Minus the Bear doing all his fantastic little looper tricks. The problem is you have to have the looper, or you have to have it in delay mode, and then you've got your three presets and the tap tempo. You know, if you want to change it to the looper, normally you have to actually flick the type switch to looper and it's in the loop mode. This actually adds a foot switch on the top that then switches it between the looper mode and the delay mode. So you can use it as a delay pedal, or you can use it as a loop pedal. And I kind of bought it because I like the looper function on it. It's only like 12 seconds, but the half speed reverse, double speed thing is all really, really good. And I was thinking about our pedal board build off Joe at some point.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, right. Yeah, maybe I'll have that on my board.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So yeah, I bought a modded Line 6 DL4 and it arrived today. Yet to plug it in, but hopefully sometime this week I'll give it a blast. But it has got, unfortunately, as much as I hate to say it, that kind of vintage digital delay sound. It still stands up today, I think, compared to so many other units.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's just fantastic. It's got a great sound in it. And I'm sure, well, that one record I am a real fan of is the first Coldplay record.
Joe, come on. It's not that bad.
Sorry, carry on.
It's there's some fantastic guitar playing on that record, some really good guitar sounds, and they used Line 6 DL4 all over it, and that's one of the first times I remember it being used.
Recognisably? Wow.
Yeah. There's loads of guitar sounds on that that are really quite clearly taken from the DL4.
I guess he's quite Edge-esque in his playing style, the fella. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. But yeah, it just... I just think it's always been a great pedal. I mean, I've had a couple before and then obviously, you know, just sort of sold it and swapped it for something else. And I was like, no. You know, a modded one at that price. I think you can buy them new now for like £179, which is an amazing price for that pedal. I think it's a fantastic bit of kit.
Our friends at iZotope have just made their portable recording solution, the Spire Studio, even better. And the best part is that you can try out the app and recording platform for Spire completely free. Download the iOS app for your phone or tablet today by following links in the description of this podcast, and make sketching down your song ideas incredibly easy and intuitive. Without the Spire, you won't have the mic or preamp, but you'll still have access to the software and effects that can polish your demo recordings more than you probably thought possible. The second generation Spire Studio ups the stakes by offering ultra low noise preamps that offer smooth, quieter recording and increased storage capacity. There's also Spire Pro, an optional subscription service accessed via the iOS app, and personalized soundcheck feature that listens and learns from your voice and environment. Check them out at iZotope.com.
Yeah. Naomi, do you ever use, because it's available as part of the HX Stomp effects, isn't it? It's the actual DL4 is what they call simple delay, I think.
Yes, it is. Yes, I have used it. I've not worked it into any of my patches, though, just yet, because I'm still enjoying my Electro-Harmonix Canyon quite a bit.
I guess as it's the HX Stomp, you're still outsourcing a lot of those other effects.
Yes, only really because I've been trying to just kind of get into the habit of continuing to kind of effects loop some stuff, and because I kind of am really familiar, I suppose, with the Canyon at this point, it's been what I've liked to use, and I've also stuck the Ditto in same effects loop, but then I'm probably not the best person to talk to about signal flow, because I am Little Miss Trial and Error when it comes to building my chain. But I've used simple delay sort of just on its own, and on its own with drive. And I mean sonically, I've always been a huge fan of the DL4, and you know, any sort of records or performances I've seen it on. I know my first kind of experience of it was tons of local bands in the sort of DIY scene that I kind of grew up with, sort of the Adebisi Shanks and those sort of bands from the sort of more slightly mathy scene in Dublin, were rocking multiple DL4s on stage. So
that whole scene was all DL4.
Exactly, yeah, like mid-2000s up to well into the 2010s when, you know, the DL4 was beginning to be more sought after secondhand than new, just because people were, as you say, kind of starting to put mods back out on the market.
My earliest memory of the DL4, or my favourite memory of the DL4, was back when my band went on tour with Black Peaks, when Black Peaks were known as Shrine, and it was a very small tour, and we were playing at the edge of the Wedge in Portsmouth, which is kind of like the cloakroom next to the Wedgwood rooms in Portsmouth. So it's this tiny venue where you play in the corner of the room. It's part of the Wedgwood rooms, but like, you know, it makes having that name attached makes it sound like the gig's great, but you are playing in a very, very small room. Mm-hmm. And I was standing at the front there watching Joe, their guitarist, play. And then he hit to his DL4 to sample in this thing, and there's just this crunch, and the buttons sort of popped off out and rolled onto the floor in front of
Oh god.
Like everyone in the audience. And the pedal was just going the sound from his guitar amp was then going because it had looped something in, and he now had no way of stopping
it.
Oh
man! So it was just like sample and holding.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which was great, but yes, it definitely needs to be upgraded. Mm-hmm. Matt and Naomi, what do you think? Like favorite digital delays? Then, like, I mean, are they even things that you care about, Naomi? Like, I'd find it difficult to choose a digital delay because I don't use them that much. Maybe the Canyon. I actually think that's lots of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I've. Honestly, my main personal experience of digital delay has just been messing around with the Boss DDs over the years, kind of have had borrowed ones and messed with them. I mean, obviously, it's not a hugely fundamental effect for bass for a lot of players. So it's never been, you know, kind of the, it's never been a priority point, I suppose, on my board. But I feel like the Canyon sonically has probably given me the closest to sort of a versatile canvas for digital delay.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I think having things like those octaving, those pitching up delays, yes, alongside
and
like
reverse and kind of shimmer. And yeah, those are exactly kind of the ones I seem to go for.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got all of that alongside all the functional standard stuff.
Yes.
It's just a very, very good, very versatile unit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I certainly feel like my delay needs in the context of bass are quite simple, and probably, you know, the basic artsy delays probably tick my list, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. What about you, Matt?
Well, if we're talking ones that you can't buy anymore. I always remember when we did our thing, I think you were there, Joe, when we did the Boss event at the House of Vans with This Will Destroy You. You did? Yes. I can't remember if you... Oh, you were there the same night, actually, when This Will Destroy You played. And then we interviewed them, I think, before. And the main guy was like, Boss DD20. Like, all the way. He's like, the secret to post-rock is the Boss DD20. and he said their entire band sound is basically built off that one pedal. And I used to have one. I think it's this fantastic and versatile and does some ridiculous... It's got 23 seconds of delay time. I don't think any delay pedal you can buy now has 23 seconds of delay time. And that was cool. It had a load of great function. I thought it was really good. I mean, I love my DD3. I just think, you know, simple, easy, sounds good, does exactly what it says on the tin kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But also, what else is out there sort of now? I'm trying to think. I mean, I've had a DD2 on my board for ages now. It's the thing that I keep going to. I don't know. I'm trying to think what else is out there. I've kind
There's
of
a lot
gone,
out there.
Oh, really?
Pink Panther, JHS Pink Panther's a strong one.
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure. It's a good one if you want, you know, that sort of digital delay sound. It's not like it does lots of things. It's not a,
yeah, it's,
you know,
it's weird because a lot of the delay pedals that just keep popping up in my mind are analog because so many people have just gone, oh, and it, I mean, I think there's been a lot of talk recently about Strymon timeline, you know, is it still relevant, you know, like 10 years on or whatever, where there's so much has changed. And I still think it certainly has a sound to it, unlike, you know, a lot of other units. Again, it just has a warmth and a clarity to it. I don't know, really. I'm trying to think of something that I'm trying to look. I've kind of snuck onto a web page just going, what is there that I'd go, you've got to buy this.
I still think that the timeline sonically is absolutely beautiful. Mm. And I think if you're after that kind of studio level digital delay, I think it remains a really strong choice, but not all of us want that pristine a level of effect. And also it's always begged the question for me, you know, how much of this is gonna really come through the mix in a gig.
In terms of
effects being that pristine. But then I'm personally probably more a fan of the the grit and the grunge and the fuzz. So,
well, yeah, exactly. I love analog delays for anything where I want a normal. If I want a delay sound to be a straight up delay sound, I'm always going to choose kind of the warmth and the character that you get with analog delays. If I want something to do something crazy, obviously you've got to go for a digital delay. And I think that's why kind of when it comes to digital delays, the ones that are more expressive and more fun and more soundscape are always going to be my favorites. Things like the KMA Audio Machine Cirrus, which I, you know, spent a lot of last year banging on about. And they actually gave me a special one with a little back plate with my name on it, which is very nice of them. But
oh, nice!
But yeah, that I mean, that's wonderful. It's a delay and a reverb, but it's also, I guess, if there was a downside to the Cirrus, I think it's one of the best pedals out there, is you can't really be normal with it. I guess where the Canyon, you've got access to all that crazy stuff, but if you want to just get a little bit of slapback, you can. Mm-hmm. The Cirrus, I think you'd struggle to kind of wind it in because it's so expressive and crazy and does
characteristic.
Weird things.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, sorry, Matt, I think I cut across you.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, it's fine. It just gave me a bit more time to look. So I'm just sort of like on this, yeah, I'm sort of looking at it now, and I've just put like all delay pedals by price. And it's interesting because there's so many pedals out there that are like, they have a character. Like, it's quite often when I think of digital delay, I think of like clean, pristine repeats. But obviously, so many digital delays out there model older, more analog units, or do something a little bit weirder than your kind of normal. I mean, I still think, well, actually, there's a couple here. The Walrus Audio D1 from their Mako series. You know, I've seen a lot of people talk about that. You've then got things like the Specular Tempus from GFI Systems, you know, kind of really sort of out there, sort of full on. And here's a good one that I just suddenly, that I think is a hidden gem. The Boss TE2 Terra Echo.
It is great. It's
every time I plug one in, I'm like, oh, there's so many cool sounds in here, because it's like it uses a technology we called MDP, multi-dimensional processing, that like layers different sounds and types and adjust multiple things depending on the frequency and how hard you hit the strings and stuff. So you get these kind of like cool like lasers and sounds and like all this like pinging of different delay times in the background. And the best example on the internet is Andy from Reverb, who, when he was doing Pro Guitar Shop, did Subterranean Homesick Alien by Radiohead, and just played that, and it's just like, yep. That is a great sound. Absolutely fantastic sound.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Sorry, I've started flicking through.
I feel like we all.
I'll tell you what, the other thing we haven't really talked about, maybe we should try and get hold of some, but these Universal Audio delay, they do a delay, a modulation, and a reverb, the Astra, the Starlight, and...
Yeah.
The Golden. I think the Golden's their reverb, the Astra's their modulation, the Starlight's their delay. I think the only thing for me is they're lacking MIDI. I don't think you can do MIDI on them, which is a shame. But I think otherwise, I've seen a lot of people demo them. I think they sound really good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They seem to sound fantastic. Whilst they're a little simple and maybe missing a couple of mod cons that you would expect from a brand like UA, who are kind of, you know, spearheading product advancement, it does sound like, when it comes to just straight up audio quality, they're pretty good. So it would be good to get hold of those. A digital delay I've been spending an awful lot of time on at the moment is the Glitch delay, which was a new delay introduced onto the Helix on the update before last, I think 3.0 or whatever it was. But it's like the Glitch delay gives you, like, so you've got your kind of standard controls, but then you can also divide your delay, slice the feedback, shuffle that, pitch that, reverse it, drift the sequence, smooth those drifts, and then create a couple of intervals as well as like some low and high cuts to kind of deal with some of the crazier artifacts that end up on there. You get some real sort of real subby low end depending on how crazy you have everything, but really interesting, like a kind of delay that sounds like nothing else. It's really got its own vibe and sound. An awful lot of fun for just creating weird noises, to be honest. So,
did you read that initial description, or is this actually how you speak off the cuff?
That was just
straight out the brain. That was, yeah. No, it's just really impressive. That's all.
I spent a lot of today with the glitch delay.
Oh, did you? It shows. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I've not yet tried it, but it's cool. I'm a huge fan of anything like that. I don't know if you've used like many sort of glitch plugins in your time, but I've always been a fan of getting, you know, really cheap plugins or you know, things sort of like sound toys where it's like super artistic sort of glitch effects. I always find them a really, really good tool for composing, actually, if you're stuck on something. And are having one of those days where playing any more than three or four notes is a struggle. Any sort of glitch effects can often be a good tool, I think, to get your brain in motion.
Yeah, fun for creating something kind of rhythmic that you can then, you know, exactly, play to or work something else out to. I'm a big fan of those rhythmic delays. I mean, Matt, you and I were speaking on last week's home recording guide. Even I played a sample of a delay, a similar sort of type of cascading delay that featured on, that's part of the Studio One plugins. But
I think There's just so much out there. I mean, using even things like the mood, you know, the Chase Bliss mood can really help you break out of a bit of your rut, because it always just does something different. But everything, it's designed and tuned in a way that it always sounds musical, which I think is, you know, is always good. You can just sort of roll with it and see what happens. I think, and the interesting thing about that is, you know, especially if you're into recording music, is it's difficult to recreate that a second time round. You know, you've kind of got to capture it in the moment and go from there, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We said we would answer some questions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. Dear listener, you should check that group out if you're not already on there. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds. Forum? Is it forum? Oh, my brain. It probably is forum.
I'm looking at it.
It is forum, of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why I give the URL out. It's not like anyone's going, oh, what is it? / what is it? HTTPS. You just type Guitar Nerds into Facebook and it comes up. It's fine. But, you know, but yes. Anyway, we did say we'd take some questions from the group, and we had some excellent questions there. So let's start them off with David David Nagel says, what are some of your guys' favorite hidden gems on the second-hand market? I love old American-made PV amps. I think that they're pretty underrated, and you can get them for quite cheap. Naomi, what do you think?
I am going to say old, really dodgy body shapes, like cheaply made sort of Explorers, old Squires. Like, I don't know, are you guys familiar with the Flying V that Squire made?
Not the Katana.
Yes, the Katana.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very cool. Although I doubt you'd find one cheap on the secondhand market now. I think that's I was going to say, just to quickly jump in, I think the problem is everyone's an expert these days. The internet has ruined finding anything good at a cheap price.
Granted, in the case of the Katana, I haven't looked at them recently, but I mean, within the last, I mean, kind of 5-6 years, I've seen them pass by and I've seen them go for cheap. The same with like Fender Rascal. I mean, yeah, you know what? I think my hidden gems are quote unquote bad choices that bigger brands have made. If that makes sense.
Oh, I like that.
So things that Fender have delved into once and then left aside forever. Those sort of models are what I live and die for. I'm an awful window shopper though. Like I feel like I take too long to make choices, and very often weird models kind of slip through my hands for that very reason. But
I think it's so easy to kind of miss them by. There was kind of a point in time about 10 years ago where Squire just seemed to be making like loads of different signature model bases, and some of them were great, but they just didn't last very long.
Yeah, exactly. And like another example, which I know they did do recently, but you can get the original models, is the Epiphone Explorer base with a Carina body. That is one that I've had my eye on for a while. And they go for not that much. I think kind of between sort of 300 to 500 you could pick one up for. Yeah. So I'm hoping to get my hands on one within the year. But my choice would be a little bit like when I go vintage shopping for anything, I suppose, furniture or clothes. Just the weird and wacky is my preference always.
That's right. I guess it's good to be able to find those. If you want to get something weird, it's often easier to find a kind of an affordable, now discontinued weird thing on the secondhand market than if that thing was released new.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. And I think something in my thinking kind of favors the forgotten model as opposed to the much sought after, everyone vying for this pristine item type thing.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Yes. Matt Knight, what about you?
I don't think it's any good asking me, because everything that I want, everyone else also wants. So, hidden gems. No, but in the past, and I keep looking, but I keep not buying at the moment just because I don't have the space, is old, kind of like, not even synths, just like weird sound modules or anything that was just like, you talk there, Naomi, about stuff that brands tried and then sort of like just did it for a little while. I'm a sucker for that, things like stuff that Roland did in like the 80s that wasn't really like our first foray into like digital sound models in like 1991. I'm like, maybe I need this 16-bit sound module for my studio. And it's like, I absolutely do not need any more of that sort of stuff. But there is some good stuff out there. I think rack gear is coming back, but I think there's definitely a point where you can get some good stuff for not a lot, and it's always worth just looking out because some things are picking up in price, but you can definitely get some cool stuff out there. And I think if you're just looking to like have a play around with some stuff and you don't want to spend a lot of money, like rack gear is a good way to do it, because you know, it was massive, you know, 30 years ago, and it sort of died a death to the point where no one was even considering, like, we're going to make a pedal version and a rack version, you know. So you can get some stuff out, some good stuff out there, especially if you want to make some unique sounds, or if you're recording and you want some stuff for outboard gear. It's definitely worth having a look out there. But yeah, like I said, I think the problem is everyone's an expert. You know, gone are the days where, you know, dear old grandma would pull down all the stuff that her son had left at the house 30 years ago, and out pops a, you know, 1959 Les Paul that he picked up secondhand in the 70s, because people just Google it and go, oh, right, actually, I think this is worth a lot of money. You know, going to a car boot sale and finding a, you know, vintage Roland drum machine that's now worth $5,000 for 50 quid. And I think that's in some ways the shame, because things like eBay, people know what stuff is worth, and also people are willing to pay crazy prices for things. If you want something, people are willing to pay that price, you know, lay that dollar on the table. You see it from all like the scalping, you know, that's going on with like limited edition pedal releases. You know, if you look at stuff like the Chase Bliss Factory was literally going for double the money after it sold out. You know, I think that's the thing. It's so difficult to find stuff. So I think you're right, Naomi. I think sometimes you have to have the niche in a particular set of gear that no one else wants to touch.
I see it as, for someone who normally isn't very positive at all, I like to think of it as seeing the potential as opposed to kind of brushing off the less favored model because you're only thinking of reselling. I mean, anything I buy, I'm not always thinking of resale. I'm usually thinking of how can I make this my tool and get the best music out of it that I can. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, in terms of kind of really frustrating price inflation, one, it's barely on the secondhand market because it's only a 2018 model. But I think I've talked before about the limited edition, just Ibanez Talman. It was like a TMB30 that was on the market in 2018. They did a turquoise sparkle, which I'm sure you would have loved, Joe. Short scale Ibanez Talman. They play fantastically. It was something like $299, I think. And any of them that pop up now are going for like £650. And it's like this literally is 3 years old. Like, how has it become this inflated in 3 years? So yeah, like you're saying with Chase Bliss and pedal releases, it it's a wild market indeed.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I think it, you know, for me, and I agree with you, Matt, about the fact that everyone's an expert, but there are still things that, even though people know what they are, they aren't necessarily popular. And whilst they're definitely increasing in price, the Fender Music Master bass, for me, is something you can still, which just seems like incredible value for money to me. I picked up mine for £400, admittedly wrecked, and then worked on it from there. But you can get them really for around £800 to £900 for a good condition Fender Music Master bass, and you think you're getting a 70s Fender for less than £1,000. I think that's fantastic. I mean, we know that the pickups are, there's no interpretation of it. The pickups are awful because it's a Strat pickup in a bass, so you're definitely going to have to swap that out. But as far as actually getting an incredible sort of super cool, incredibly vibey vintage Fender for not a lot of money, there's nothing else like it out there, and they always seem to pop up. They're definitely going up in price, but I keep thinking like I should really start trying to get as many of these as possible, because they're sort of like, I just did a little reverb search, and there are two available in the same finish that I've got mine, and they're very good condition, but they're both sort of £1,300, which is it's getting up in price, but
it certainly is. Yeah, only a few years ago I remember these going for sort of €400 or €500, which they're on the up for sure.
I think one thing I was actually talking to my dad about bizarrely is he's into collecting cars, but he's in his 70s, and he's like, the stuff that people my age want is stuff from the like the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, like the cars they looked up to when he was a kid. But he's like, people now like cars from the 80s, like are going for insane money because people get to like our age, and then they're like, oh, I've now got some disposable income, and there becomes an increased demand for that. So I actually think that now is the time to start buying the good stuff that's coming out, in the last 5 years, because that's the stuff they're going to be the hidden gems of in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Because people playing now are going to be like, oh, I could never afford that American vintage Strat. And in 20 years' time, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, amazing. I mean,
it's going to be the Valentines. It's going to be the DK24s. Yeah.
Think about American standard Strats from 20 years ago going for as much as you could buy them new 20 years ago. Like, they've literally, they're £1,000. They've almost never lost any money. It's insane.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It's definitely a weird market at the moment. We're running out of hidden gems. I mean, I do think PV's a good shout, as David pointed out. PV do some great stuff that can be super affordable. and you can get good ones. A brand that I love that are really like, I guess the other thing you've got to do is find a brand that are really out of favor at the moment. And a brand that I think of sort of waned in relevance at the moment is Hartke. And
oh, yeah.
And they make absolutely some absolutely fantastic stuff. And if you if you shop around now, you can pick up a Hartke Kilo, which was their 1,000-watt head, like valve preamped head with normal tone controls. I think it had a built-in limiter and then a graphic EQ. I mean, it sounded absolutely monstrous. You can pick those up for like 450 quid now on the second-hand market, which is fantastic. It's just because they're not like, they're not really ahead of the game at the moment. They're not making the products that are exciting people right now. But some of that old gear, absolutely fantastic. The old AK cabs by Hartke, they were some of my favourite. They were cotton wool lined, just like the old vintage Ampeg ones. Like some real attention to detail on actually making those cabs. And they were shallow, like vintage cabs as well. So they had a real, real kind of vintage tone to them, really sort of mid-focused. They were very cool. And they're now discontinued. Unfortunately, that's maybe not a good example because you never see them secondhand. I think people that have got them are keeping hold of them.
Mm. Yeah. 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 It's a tricky game, I would say. I think even things like old Blues Juniors or Pro Juniors, like the American-made ones, it's like as soon as people, two or three people use them, or as soon as someone famous uses them, it's like, that isn't a hidden gem anymore.
No, exactly. Exactly. Well, that pretty much brings us up to time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to be continuing over on our Patreon special, where we're going to be answering a bunch of extra questions from our group. We've got some other good questions to answer. We're going to talk about those. I don't know, we might even talk about this new Eventide pedal as well. But you can join us over there, dear listener, for as little as $1 a month. patreon.com/guitar nerds. $1 gets you this episode ad-free and early every week. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and our entire back catalogue. And the $10 tier, you get all of those things. Plus, I sing a pretty flippin' fantastic song. My songs this year have been absolutely brilliant. There's often a rap. You'll love that. And, you know, your name gets included in it. So, you know, there you go, dear listener. All that for $10 a month. You can find us on your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
From the plugin of the week, Guitar Nerds coming in your ears. Listen to us day and night and drink a bunch of beers. We got Matt Knight and Jay Cross too. Pat can even shows up when he's got nothing to do. We got JD and Naomi McCloud. But I am the best one because I'm sexy, jumping loud. But we couldn't do this podcast without you. You're everything a podcast host could ever want is true. Simpson, Eric Vaughn, John Conway, Jonathan Hafferty, James Thor, Paul Drew, Russell Heal, and Yogi, the guitarist, Ty Allen, Carl Harris, Todd Lifter, Todd Sons, Sean Hughes, Joe Hubbard, Brian Hansen, Shane, America, Jeffrey Wax, Andrew Frost, Brian Isaac, Gavin Vanderland, and Adam Manley, Robert Butter, what's got out in Mark Cazal, Catawaki, Simon Hill, Vaughn, Stuart Robinson, Christian Lund, Hansen, Keith Adams, Michael McClay, Eric Cloud, Ryan McDonough, Jake Cupper, Larry Peters, Joe Paddock, Ken Sayers, Abe Matthews, Katerina, the band, Sean Albo, John Langdon, Andy Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nick Nagel, Stephen Brook, Dave Lee, Jay Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Wyland, Christopher Lacey, Hans Hans, Derek Rich.
Scalabrine, Paul Corrigan, Moo Gravit!
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.